Puzzle Master Will Shortz is off this week to give us a chance to continue our visit to Buffalo, New York. Last week, Will gave a double challenge, which you can find at the Weekend Edition Sunday page at npr.org. And a reminder, entries must be received by Thursday at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. Mark Goldman has been showing us around Buffalo. Since moving to the City of Light in 1967, Mark has taught urban studies and renovated downtown buildings to create a restaurant and a nightclub. He took us to one of the city's oldest churches, once a stop on the Underground Railroad.
The Michigan Avenue Baptist Church was founded as a congregation in the early 1840s. The building itself, I believe, was built in 1845. And that was right at the time that abolitionism in the Northeast was really heating up. Buffalo, it was a magnet for runaway slaves because of its proximity to Canada. I mean, if you could make it here, you're just a short swim or a short boat ride away to freedom. And also, the 1840s was before the Compromise of 1850, so you could still... You were free once you made it up into the free states.
Come, just as you are, to worship.
The congregation worships upstairs. There are other rooms in the basement, including a small bathroom. Kevin Cottrell grew up in the neighborhood and now arranges tours of stops on the old Underground Railroad.
In those days, of course, as you know, they had chamber pots or outhouses. So what was here was not the bathroom. And when the church was modernized and they stuck the bathroom in, as you can see, the bathroom has kind of like been inlaid. They uncovered what was left of the hideout area.
Oh, well, let me look. Yeah, you've taken definitely. A square of cardboard off the wall. We're going to squeeze in here with the commode and look. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So
at the far end on the right, there's a hole in the wall. It opens onto a space a little larger than a broom closet with a soggy dirt floor.
If bounty hunters came accompanied by a U.S. Marshal, if you were hiding downstairs and they were closing in on the area, all you had to do was really come out of here, walk up these stairs and run out the front door.
Cottrell regrets not knowing the significance of the church when he was growing up around the corner. He wants to make sure that neighborhood kids today don't miss out on that knowledge.
You know, you can teach history all day long, but until you bring them into the site, because these are the living museums, these are the ones that speak to you, these are real. So until a child sees it and smells it and touches it and all of those senses, it comes alive. And I know it works because when I'm around town, children will come up to me and say, "That's Mr. Underground Railroad Man," so I know it's happening.
Fewer than 1,000 African Americans lived in Buffalo when the Civil War began. By 1960, as the Civil Rights Movement gained momentum, the black population had grown to more than 70,000. Our guide, Mark Goldman, wrote City on the Lake, A History of Buffalo. It includes many chapters on the effort to integrate the city's classrooms.
By the middle of the 1970s, Buffalo public schools were racially segregated. Some people argue that it was by custom, but there were a group of plaintiffs who argued that it was by law. And what they did is they brought a case in federal court, federal district court, in 1976, in which they said that the city of Buffalo, along with the Buffalo Board of Education, should be found guilty of maintaining and operating a racially segregated school system.
During his 30 years on the bench, Senior Federal District Judge John Curtin presided over a docket of cases reflecting society's concerns: desegregation of Buffalo's police and fire departments, class action suits over the contamination of Love Canal in Niagara Falls, and integration of Buffalo schools.
I grew up in a community, South Buffalo. Now, many people there were opposed to the school integration case. On the other hand, we had a series of meetings, and some of the people who were the severest critics in the beginning, they joined the chorus and said, "We're convinced." Now, I don't say this was an overwhelming majority, but enough to make it work. When the court made an order, they would abide by the law and do their best. That is the spirit, I think, here. In our community about many things. We can't satisfy everybody, but there is that spirit of trying to work things out.
The legacy of Judge Curtin's work is on display every day at a high school on Buffalo's west side.
because my background is in education, maybe I'm particularly fond of schools, but I really think you can learn so much about a community by what goes on in its public schools. And so we're now going to go to a place called Grover Cleveland High School, which was, until about 15 years ago, it was the school for the Italian Americans who lived in that district. It was, you know, it had John Travolta's character in Saturday Night Fever lived in Buffalo, he would have gone to Grover Cleveland. With all those, and you can still see photographs of all these, you know, strutting 1950s Italian guys with their t-shirts rolled up. And anyway, the Italians left, they were replaced by Latin Americans, primarily Puerto Ricans. And then in the last 10 years, Vietnamese, Caribbean blacks, Croatians, Russians, Laotians are coming into Buffalo, not as immigrants primarily, as they do in bigger cities, but they come in as refugees. In other words, they're not Buffalo. This is a very important distinction. Buffalo is not a destination of choice for immigrants, unfortunately. But what it is a center for where refugees are placed. And all their children go to the school, to Grover Cleveland.
The main hall of Grover Cleveland High School is festooned with the flags of many countries. There's also a map on the wall. We are the world. The corridors echo with the accents of a dozen or more languages from places like Cuba, Bolivia, Ethiopia, Burma, Laos, Kosovo, Bosnia. The classrooms in this school are micro melting pots used to teach art, science, math, history, and for most of the students, English as a second language.
My name is Nasser Al-Mughannahi. I am from Yemen.
My name is Laura Low. I come from Indonesia.
My name is Mashar Kajovi. I'm from Benin.
The first day it was hard for me because I don't know nobody. I don't know a lot of English, you know, so it was hard a little bit.
I had never been to American school, and it was my first time, and like I saw like big school.
I feel really welcome. Other school, they only have like only students from here, like American and stuff, but this school got some from Togo, some from here, some from Arabia, other country, France, Africa, Benin. I like to meet new people and from different cultures too, so that makes me really happy.
Although language differences can be a little intimidating for a student at Grover Cleveland High School, seeing the principal is not.
I'm Ben Randall, principal at Grover Cleveland High School.
So how long have you been principal here?
12 years, yeah.
How has the school changed in your tenure?
The population of students has changed. When I first came here, we had 10, 12 different countries represented. Now we have 52 countries and 34 different languages.
Wow.
And that's, you know, sort of reflects every time there's a little problem in the world, you know, we see the change here.
Why do you stay here? Why do you want to
continue? It's a
here?
Wonderful experience. This is what America is all about. We are a land of immigrants. All of us trace our roots back to other locations, and every group that comes in adds another little piece to what the fabric of American society is. So it's always something new and challenging to be done. It's a constant learning experience, not only for the children, but also for the staff itself.
What do you think the future holds?
Well, I don't think we're going to see any perceptible changes in it. The world has its share of problems, and I don't see those problems going away. So I see a continuation of students coming from other parts of the world to start a new life.
The first stop in Buffalo for many immigrants is a drab, two-story red brick building on the fringes of downtown. Mark takes a roundabout way to get us there.
This is good that we're actually taking this route to the Catholic Charities Resettlement Plaza, because this is the way suburbanites enter the city every day. They enter the city down here, and they're going to make a right on Tupper Street, which is where we're going to go, and that takes you right by the Catholic Resettlement. So I like to think that this is one kind of a gateway, an entryway for suburbanites, and yet it's also an entryway, as we'll see, for refugees from all over the world.
Thomas Nchgeantwari arrived in Buffalo early last year from Rwanda. He now helps families get settled during their first days in their new country and their new city. He tends to everything from arranging English lessons to guiding them through the government bureaucracy. This day, Thomas shepherds a family of 12 from Somalia. The matriarch stands stiffly in traditional clothes. Her children and grandchildren surround her, wearing donated jackets and shirts.
The first thing we do here is to find the housing for them. So I did find a house for them, a big house, two bedroom first floor and two bedroom the second floor. And today I asked them to be here to open a case also. It's a, what you call a match grant case. Mm-hmm. So to tell them how they will survive, to tell them how they will get money, the food stamps and Medicaid. So they have to get a job. So we are going to find a job for them.
While Thomas tends to the practical needs of America's newest residents, their emotional needs are less obvious and less quickly resolved. Anne Britton is director of the Catholic Charities Immigration and Refugee Assistance Program.
If you can just imagine what it would be like for you to maybe have been in this process for 2 or 3 years in refugee camps, fleeing, trying to get safely somewhere, all of a sudden you get to this destination you've been waiting for. Initially, there's this great joy, wow, I've arrived. But then reality sets in. This is a different language. The food is different. Streetlights, there's so many vehicles. So there's this real shock that will sink people, and we watch it. Or they thought they were going to come to the United States, and they knew that somebody from their village was here, and they get to Buffalo, and their friend is in El Paso, or their friend is in Sacramento, and it's, well, can we go over there tonight and see them? No. Yeah. So the reality sets in. And then they start back up. We're here to help them regain control of their lives.
In one form or another, since 1945, Catholic Charities has welcomed immigrants to Buffalo. From Europe in the years following World War II, and in recent decades, people from Africa and Asia. The new influx of refugees has been a mixed blessing for Buffalo. While the diversity of the city is deeper, the economy is strained, burdened by an unemployment rate that outstrips the national average by more than 3 percentage points. The city's economic future can look sobering, even on a stop at a neighborhood bar. What's our next stop, Mark?
We're going to The Place.
The Place?
The Place.
What's The Place?
Well, if Buffalo is a city of neighborhoods, which it really is, The Place is the ultimate neighborhood restaurant in the heart of the west side of the city. The Place is a restaurant that's right in at the corner of Lexington and Ashland. It's been there for probably 70 years, and it looks exactly as it did, I'm sure, when it first opened.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Mayor Anthony Mazziello stops by on his way home from City Hall.
Hey, what's happening?
How are you, sir?
Chatting with the patrons, Mazziello reminisces about his days playing high school basketball.
I see you guys ruined my college career.
Where'd you go?
St. Bonnie's.
Oh, you went to Bonnie's? Well, actually,
we
never
beat up on you. Guys.
Yeah, you beat up on me. I paid the price because we never beat Bonnie's in the 6 times I played against them.
The mayor finally breaks away from the clutch of his constituents to settle at a table.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm Leanne Hansen. It's nice to meet you. Have a seat.
So what's a nice Italian guy like you doing in an Irish bar like this?
You kidding me? Wherever there's good food and good drink, you'll find anybody and everybody in Buffalo. Matter of fact, we're just talking at the bar. You know, people we grew up with, in the 60s, whether they were from South Buffalo or I was from the West Side or somebody was from North Side, we're all still friends. We all still mingle. We all still socialize in the same places.
Mazziello has spent the day answering questions from reporters and constituents about plans to bring a casino to downtown Buffalo. He sounds more resigned to the idea than enthusiastic.
Gaming is here. You have lotto, you have lottery, you have bingo, you have racetracks. The fact of it is this spins off more economic impact as far as job creation than all those other gambling aspects.
Hmm. And there's no alternative? I mean...
Well, to a large part of our constituency, unfortunately, there isn't. There are people out there that don't have the ability to work at jobs to support themselves. That's one of the downsides of our city right now. With the demise of industry and manufacturing, just think about it. 30 years ago, Bethlehem Steel had
you know, 20,000 people. They got 2,000 people now. Republic Steel had 8,000 to 10,000 people. They're out of business. Think of all the companies that fed off those particular giants. They're out of business. And, you know, at one time, you can go from Bethlehem Steel to Republic Steel or from Chevy to Ford or whatever. But today, you can't do that.
The city's economy goes to the heart of Ken Moriarty's business. He owns the place, where regulars say the crowd has thinned in recent years. He takes a break from tending bar to talk about growing up, helping his father and uncle, and looking toward the future and what it might hold for his children.
I can remember coming when I was 5 years old on a Saturday and Sunday, and they'd make me scrape the gum off the bottom of chairs, or my dad would have me in the basement, and there's old pipes on there. He goes, unscrew a pipe here, put a coat hanger in here, and pull the gunk out of it. I have a 14-year-old and 8-year-old, and my 8-year-old comes in, and I have him doing the same things that my dad taught me and my uncle taught me, and I said, I'd never do that. I'll never do that to my kids, and I'm doing it myself. I put into my kids' minds, if you treat people the way you want to be treated when you go out, you'll always have we'll always make a living. We'll never get wealthy off of it, but we'll always have a living. And that's important to us.
Buffalo's next generation of neighborhood tavern owners and patrons stands to inherit a city very different from the one celebrated at the Pan American Exposition of 1901. But those who now live in the city's neighborhoods, longtime resident Judge John Curtin, prodigal daughter Annie DeFranco, and transplant Mark Goldman, display a pride and resilience akin to the optimism of their predecessors, and now look together to the challenges facing Buffalo in the 21st century. Mark Goldman, I'd like to thank you a lot for taking us around your Buffalo and ending here at the place. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I've loved every minute of it. It's been my great pleasure, and I hope the whole world will hear about our story. Thanks.
We'd also like to thank Pat Virgil and Linda Ray of the Buffalo and Erie County Historical Society, Joe Blatty, Michelle Gallant, and Professor Mike Frisch of the University at Buffalo, and our friends and colleagues at member stations WBFO and WNED in Buffalo, New York.